Good morning and welcome to the Tuesday edition of The Morning Show. This is Julie Calamine, normally joined by Phil Huff, who is away this week. For those of you who are just joining us, we are at 88.5 KRFY, listener-supported community radio for North Idaho. If you're out of range today and would like to listen to our show, know that you can find us at www.krfy.org. And if you missed the entire program, please tune in and listen to the podcast, also found at krfy.org. Well, we've got a very interesting morning this morning, something I don't think we've ever had, a topic I don't think we've ever had on The Morning Show. And we're going to be talking about ancestral skills, people who teach them, activities that go on around the ancestral skill community, and some of the gatherings that they attend. We'll be joined in a moment by Ed Busby and Gene Jones, both instructors at the Gatherings Between the River in or near Chewelah, Washington. We'll be introducing you folks in a moment. But first, let's talk about the weather. Weather's important when you live in Sandpoint, Sagal, Pendre, etc. So today, look for patchy fog levels before 8 a.m., otherwise mostly sunny with a high near 49. The wind will calm and it will become a north wind around 6 miles per hour in the afternoon. Tonight, we'll have increasing clouds with a low around 32. Northwest, northeast wind, 6 to 10 p.m. And Wednesday, there will be rain and snow showers, likely before 11 a.m., then rain showers, high near 49. Actually, it looks like rain. So enough weather. We all know about it. Well, let's talk a little bit about our weekend events before we go into the interview. By we, I mean I, and then our guests, since we don't have Phil. My weekend event coincided with one of our guests' weekend events because I was out skiing at Schweitzer Mountain, and there were some interesting activities happening up there. I skied and I watched a race. I'm going to introduce you, Ed Busby. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning.
How are you today?
Just fine.
Good.
Yeah.
Well, why don't you tell us about your weekend activity since you are also up at the mountain?
Well, yes, I work up in the rental shop and some of our crew put together a Viking ship for the cardboard box race. And I kind of helped with the logistics involved. And used a lot of my furry and buckskin type clothing to help make the Vikings look kind of wild.
And yeah. A little authentic. And this has to do with our topic today, because I think some of these were materials that you might use later on at a gathering.
Oh, yes.
Yes. And, well, I'll just continue on and introduce guests. Our next guest is Gene Jones. Good morning, Gene.
Good morning.
And you're also an instructor and a practitioner of ancestral skills. What were you doing this weekend? Anything?
I was working in my friend's antique shop. So still, I mean, not necessarily ancestral skills, but still having fun with old things and sharing them with people. And it's like working in a museum, but you get to touch and handle and people get to walk home with things and they love it. So.
And some ancestral materials, not necessarily quite related.
Right. Yeah.
That's right.
So that's what I was doing.
And I actually have a third guest in the studio this morning, and he's kind of a quiet one. He's like a little mouse in the corner here, but we're going to introduce him anyway. And his name is Indy. He's Gene's son, but his full name is Indiana Jones, I understand. Good morning, Indy. Do you want to speak into the mic and say good morning? It'll push it over for you.
Oh,
nope, I've got a big N-O from him. Well, you'll just have to assume he's here then.
He's a shy one.
Yes, I see that, but he's a nice guy. Well, let's introduce the topic once again, and we'll get started on the interview. So today we are talking about ancestral skills and also about the topic of gatherings that happen where people come together and learn and share these skills. So I'll again introduce Ed Busby. Good morning, Ed.
Morning again.
And good morning, Gene Jones.
Hello.
Both instructors and practitioners. Yep. Well, why don't you tell us just a little bit about yourselves and how you got involved in this area of interest for you both?
Well, I've always been interested in this type of thing since I was a small child and just kind of grew up playing in the woods and learning different things about ancient ways. My hero, Tarzan, always wanted to be able to go live with Tarzan and the great apes. And so I'm still practicing. When I get my skills all together and I can go over there and I grow up, I'm going to move over.
It's still on your list.
Oh, yes.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, you better hurry up.
Yeah. Bucket list item, that's for sure. Huh?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, That's a good way to think about it. That's great.
In real life, I'm kind of semi-retired ski bum.
Okay. And have chance to practice some of those skills.
Yes.
Yeah. Gene, what about you? What brought you to ancestral skills?
I grew up living in the woods, 160-acre farm out in the middle of nowhere. And I just always loved being in the outdoors and just having a great time. I rode my horses all over the place and got into this because friends of mine brought it to me and said, hey, we think you'll really like this. And I always felt like the awkward person everywhere I went. I felt like the weird person, you know, the person that stood out in the crowd and people just kind of went, eh. But when I went to my first gathering, I went, oh my gosh, I found my people. I found my tribe.
Is that a common feeling, the feeling that you found your tribe when mm-hmm. you show
yes.
up at a gathering?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like you're at a family reunion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, why don't you tell us a little bit more about ancestral or primitive skills? I'm not sure we all understand what it is and what it isn't.
Well, I think what it really boils down to is it's teaching people how our ancestors lived for thousands of years now, and not just surviving, because when you say surviving, that denotes a certain amount of struggle.
Yes.
That you're just barely making it by. And our ancestors obviously thrived because we are here. And so it's basically just telling people, well, this is what they did. This is what they did for medicine. This is what they did to make fire under different types of conditions with different materials with what's in your area. And it's not just like Native American skills. It's ancestral skills from around the world.
So we know a little bit more about what it is. Ed, why don't you tell us what it isn't?
Well, some people wonder if it's a mountain man rendezvous. And the really big difference is black powder and whiskey.
They
have it, and we're not. We don't. This is a drug and alcohol free family event.
Yeah.
So it's
not about necessarily having a root cellar and putting away 20 years worth of canned goods. It's not that sort of. We're not in that survivalist mode for sure.
No, we're not preppers.
Mm-hmm. No.
Yeah.
That's what I was trying to get.
We're
to.
Not doomsday preppers.
No.
Yeah.
This kind of evolved from. Primitive skills gatherings, and there was just a few people back in the day that kind of practiced this sort of thing, and they would get together and have some campouts. And then they say, well, let's have an all Stone Age campout, so to speak. And it kind of started like that. And then as more people kind of joined in, there was, we don't have a lot of time here, so let's use metal blades rather than, and even in my ancestors in Northern Europe wore buckskins long after they discovered how to make steel.
Sure.
And so it's part of my heritage to use a nice quality tool when I'm out there slaving away at making a buckskin.
Yes. Yeah. Polar fleece took a long time to come along, didn't it?
Yeah.
Those skins were important for a long time. Yeah.
So our gatherings have evolved a bit also. Nowadays, we're incorporating some pioneering skills, backyard blacksmithing. That's a good thing to know, possibly. And it's a great hobby. You can make some really fun stuff. Yeah.
There's so much that it incorporates that it's kind of hard to, like, jam-pack it down into one. You can do everything from basket weaving, different types of basket weaving, whether it's called an Adirondack basket, which is a backpack, basically, that's woven together. Or there's soft fiber basket weaving, where you make this cute little soft fiber things out of, you know, jute cordage, things like that. You can learn how to make your own cordage out of dog bane and cedar and even stinging nettle.
Interesting.
And there's just a wide variety of things that you can find there.
And there's obviously a wide variety of clothing that we see, because as I'm looking at the two of you, and listeners, this will be posted up on our website later, I'm looking at Ed, and he's wearing a rather interesting looking buckskin garment with a beaded necklace, and he came in not wearing it now in a felt hat that I think was felted at a gathering. Is that true, Ed?
Yes.
Yes. Go ahead. All right. And Gene, I'm looking at you, and you are in somewhat similar garb. You're in a...
I have a buckskin skirt.
Yes.
It's a wrap skirt. So it's one you just, you know, undo some ties and it's just a wrap around. And,
yes. Yeah. And I'm seeing a necklace that looks like it might have been made by you.
I got this. This is one of those earth magnet rings that I found. And then all these beads are antique trader beads that I got at a gathering. And so they're from the 1800s.
Neat.
And, you know, so to me, that's like carrying a bit of history with me and connection to my past. And
very cool.
Yeah, so, it's just one of those fun things.
So you're not in full regalia for the gathering yet, but you did dress up for me. It'll be fun for folks to look on and see the photo later.
Well, see, that's the cool thing about the gatherings. You aren't necessarily, not everybody has to wear this. You can come wearing whatever you want. People come in their blue jeans or their basketball shorts. It doesn't matter. I mean, you wear whatever you want.
As long as you're wearing something.
As long as you're wearing something, we're good.
That's right. Good, good. Well, let's look big picture. Are gatherings happening all over the country, all over the world?
Yeah, they are. You find gatherings all over the country. I mean, they used to be very spotty in certain areas and people had to travel long distances. And now they're cropping up all over the place. And at Rabbit Stick, we have people that come from other countries to learn how to do this. And then they take that to their countries. We had a guy from Scotland a couple years ago named Peter that came to the Rabbit Stick Gathering, which is down in Rexburg, Idaho. And he was going to take that back to Scotland so he could start gatherings there. We had a guy from Israel a few years ago. And he was going to go back to Israel because he wanted to do the same thing there.
That's a mighty old civilization. You'd think they'd have started having gatherings by now, Israel.
You would think, but the way he put it was, he goes, my people have forgotten their ancient past. And so they're falling apart.
Yes.
So he wanted to help them, you know, reconnect with their past by doing that.
Maybe a little further away from that than we are here in Idaho, because we've had Native peoples and been a state and a country for less time than many other areas of the world.
Yeah.
And you might be surprised, some Native peoples who have grown up in our modern civilized world did not have the opportunities as youngsters to learn some of these skills. And some of them are also re-seeking to rediscover. I mean, you got to admit, a lot of their culture was destroyed, and they're trying to re-find it.
It's another source that they can come to.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Do either of you have any idea how long the phenomenon of a gathering has been taking place? Have there been gatherings for 20 years, 30 years?
Probably a few thousand, tens of thousands. Well,
right.
Yeah.
Those kinds. Yeah. Your kind of gatherings I'm worrying about.
I think Dave Holliday, but Dave Westcott kind of started that off about 30 years ago.
Rabbit Stick was, I think, kind of the first really organized culmination of
modern
some
day.
Of these informal gatherings.
Right.
And that's been over 30 years ago.
Yeah. I think actually this year is going to be the 30th.
Oh, it is.
Yeah, this year is going to be the 30th.
That's
and
right.
It started with just like friends getting together and sharing these skills. And then they said, hey, well, let's share it with more people. And it's been in the last probably 15 years that it really has caught on. And Rabbit Stick Gathering went from 15 years ago, I believe they said there was about 50 to 100 people, and now Rabbit Stick is 400 to 500 people.
That's big.
Yeah.
And I've heard the name Rabbit Stick before. I've heard it mentioned on one of my morning shows before, and I'm just now hearing about the Between the Rivers Gathering. Why don't you tell us a little bit about this upcoming gathering, because it's even closer than Rabbit Stick.
Right. So Between the Rivers is in our neck of the woods. I can say officially it is an hour and 30 minutes drive from Sandpoint.
She would know that because she drove over this morning, the poor thing.
Yeah. And the gathering is literally 10 minutes from my house. So it's literally in my backyard pretty much. It's one that Ed comes to that. We love it. He adds a lot of flavor to it.
Well, thank you.
And how so, Ed? How do you add the flavor? Are you participating?
I do participate. I'm not really sure.
It's his smile. It's his sense of humor.
Well, thank you.
He's the fun in camp.
Okay.
Very good. But you help out a little too. Do you a little? You help out with folks at the gathering.
We all try to help out and share our different knowledge. Officially, this time I'm going to teach some different navigation skills, something ancient that young people nowadays have never heard of: map and compass. This was back before GPS. Yeah.
Oh, my.
So, oh, yeah.
Before cell phones.
And before cell phones, yes. But in addition to that, what I consider modern technology, map and compass, we'll do a little bit of star navigation and all of this is going to depend on weather as far as star and sun navigation, and then some other tricks to use topography and your terrain, knowledge of terrain to help find your way.
Yes, it sounds a little bit like the precursor to our game of orienteering that just was happening in Sandpoint last week, I believe it was, and we had those folks on the radio Tuesday, 2 weeks ago. But it's you're the precursor to modern orienteering, I would say.
Well,
or maybe the
not
same
really.
As
really, I think I'm the precursor to modern orienteering as far as the type of skills that we incorporate that I incorporated in my training and experience. There's no easy routes.
Right.
We went just right out into the worst brush and terrain imaginable. And so there's no street to run down, you know. You
right.
can still do this stuff in very, very difficult terrain.
Yeah, point A to point B was not always simple.
Yeah,
so yeah. Been, still yeah. not.
Well, and if you think back on though, back in ancient civilizations and back in the time before all modern technology, all of us were naturally just able to navigate through a lot of the terrain and nature just because it was part of us. Modern civilization has taken a lot of those natural abilities and skills out of us. And so we have to actually learn this. We have to reteach ourselves and we have to relearn it. And it's sad. But luckily for me, because I grew up in the woods and I've always lived in the woods, I didn't lose it. I can't get lost in the woods, but get me in a city, I get so turned around. I hate shopping malls.
Me too.
Because I get lost in them.
Yes. They can be confusing.
Yeah, yeah.
Tell us more about, let's hear a little bit more about the big picture of the gathering. When is it? For how long does it go? What are the great standout features we should look forward to if we would attend?
Well, it starts Memorial Day. And so it is May 29th and it runs for that week. So it goes through June 3rd. It is a family thing. Anybody and everybody can come. There's skills, anything you can think of, pretty much. There are 60 instructors this year. And we also provide stuff for kids camp. I do kids camp.
Well, let's hear a little about this kids camp.
The kids get to have some fun doing different types of earth crafts. So they will be learning how to do, they'll be doing some pottery and then natural earth pigments and painting. They will get to make their own flag to put at their camp. So, and give themselves a nickname. So this will be their spot and their, so they feel like they're part of it. They will also get to do some friction fire and napping, which is learning how to make their own knife blades or arrowheads. So they will be handling sharp objects.
It's not that thing after lunch that little kids do.
And some adults. No, it's, you know, they get to have fun making arrowheads and whatnot. My Indy here, he made his first arrowhead out of basalt when he was 8 years old.
Wow.
And then he got to make his own complete authentic arrow from that, all using ancient technology, not using any of modern tools to do it. And, you know, so there's all sorts of things. They can make bows there. There's a ton of different stuff. We have some really neat instructors coming this year that are coming from other parts of Washington and Idaho to help out with this, even an instructor from Oregon. And so
should be fun.
Yeah.
So if you're a parent and you're bringing your children to Between the Rivers, you can send your kids off for part or all the day and then see them later on.
Right. You know, and they can choose whether they can be part of kids camp or go do other classes. We take ages 4 to 12, basically. And if they want to do other stuff, that's fine. But, you know, I always warn people. I warn parents at the very beginning. I promise to not lose, maim, or kill any of your children. But beyond that, no, they will be handling sharp objects. They will be wandering around in the woods, and they will be playing with fire and building shelters and playing in the mud and water and all sorts of fun things.
And I'm looking at this little kid that apparently has been there, Indy. I have two questions. One is, do you bring you already got a nickname, kiddo. Do you bring that nickname, or do you get a new one when you go to Between the Rivers? Oh, he's a quiet one. Mommy might have to answer.
He's a shy one. He just goes by Indy.
Okay, either way.
You know, yeah.
And I'm looking at him, and I see he's got all his fingers and toes. Well, I can't see the toes, but it looks like he has not been maimed.
No, he hasn't, miraculously, and he's still alive, even though, you know, little kids also get handed things like atlatls, and darts. And these darts are not like lawn darts. They're like anywhere from 4 to 6 feet long.
Oh, my.
And they are hurling these things at a target sometimes that is moving.
I've had to ask more than once, what is an atlatl? Why don't you describe that? One of you describe that for us.
I did be better at that than I am.
Basically, it's a little bit of a leverage device. Imagine a handheld catapult.
Handheld catapult.
That chunks a spear. And you, a bunch of guys get these devices and they run up close to a mammoth and they chunk their spears into it and then run before they get stomped on. And they wait for it to bleed to death, and it's time for dinner.
Ah, good to know. Yeah. And in modern times, you're not flinging them at mammoths, but you must have some target.
I'll tell you, we haven't found a mammoth yet, but you never
never know
these guys.
If they we might find get one, hung, he's
you'll
trouble.
Be ready.
Depends
you'll
on
be
how
prepared.
Hungry we are.
Yeah.
So we haven't. I did interrupt you and ask about children's programs before we heard about the entire gathering. So let's talk more about accommodations, food, et cetera.
All right. So the really cool thing about BTR, which is what the nickname is for it, Between the Rivers Gathering, is that breakfast and dinner are provided. Now, these aren't just like, you know, oatmeal and you know, bare bones food. You get fed like kings.
Good groceries.
Yes. Breakfast and dinner is included, and you are full. You walk away. Mm-hmm. If you walk away hungry, it's your own fault. There's always leftovers. There are porta potties provided because we are off the grid. So, you know, it's porta potties. Potable water is brought in. So drinking water and cooking water and cleaning water is brought in. And camping spaces. People can come in with their campers, their motorhomes, whatever, but we have them in a designated area that's called the tin teepee camping.
Ah. Ed, why don't you tell us about some of the accommodations you've seen?
Well, you can clean up. There's a really nice creek right close by, and it's just really nice to go down there and rinse off. The water's relatively lukewarm, or not lukewarm, but it's not freezing.
Depends on the weather.
Yeah, and if we get lucky, Emil will bring his natural draft fire.
Oh yeah, his
fed hot tub.
Yeah, neat.
And
Gene mentioned that some people will come in an RV and there's a tin trailer, but that's not what everyone stays in, is it?
We'll have the main area will be full of teepees and yurts and various types of
canvas tents,
gypsy shelters, and canvas tent wall tents, and
Mick and his gypsy wagon. That is something to behold. So Mick comes from the coast, and I think he's in Oregon, I believe.
I think so,
somewhere around there. And he comes up in his gypsy wagon that he built himself, and it is absolutely gorgeous. And he's always happy to let people go through and look at it and see how he built it and whatnot. And most people are, if they have unique things like that, they will allow people to go through them. There is a huge lodge teepee that comes in and they let you go through because they set it up like a museum, how a traditional teepee would be set up. And
neat.
Yeah. And a lot of people will be using modern tents. Mm-hmm. So, yes.
So you don't have to feel embarrassed if you have to come in your REI tent. If you don't have a teepee or a...
We've got people in their 80s that are bringing their fifth wheel in, and I don't begrudge them the comfort.
Nope.
And then all of the other vehicles are parked in a separate area so that around the camp and our main area, we've got all the fun teepees and stuff.
It's all foot traffic mixed in.
Mixed in with tarps and tents and such. Yeah.
See, for me, when I first started, because I first started going to gatherings 5 years ago, and I just had my Coleman dome tents. And that's what I used up until I think last year was the first year I finally had a big canvas tent. And this year I'm upgrading to a teepee.
Whoa. So, can't wait to see that.
Yeah. So it's a process. And, you know, if you come in your dome tents or nylon, whatever, it doesn't matter. You know, even if you just put a tarp up over yourself and sleep on a tarp on the ground, it's okay. It doesn't matter.
Yes. Now, I need to point out, it is a nonprofit, right? It's not a for-profit organization that organizes.
Between the Rivers is actually put on by Bridges to the Past, which is dedicated to teaching the skills of our ancestors. So, ancestors from around the world. It's basically helping create bridges to our past.
Right. Very good. I wanted to get back and talk a little bit about food because... I'm a little bit of a baby when it comes to eating new things. And since we're at the gathering, which has ancestral skills, will the food that you're serving be ancestral food?
No. It's all good, just normal modern food.
We're not going to feed you bugs and bushes.
No.
That might be an option at some point, but your meals will be stuff you've seen before.
Yeah. Recognizable.
Normal, recognizable food.
Yeah.
Eating cicadas on the side, that is entirely, you know, your option.
But optional.
If we get lucky and get a bunch of grasshoppers, molasses.
Well, and there was, it wasn't last year, but a couple years ago, somebody brought some cougar meat to cook over the main fire pit. That was so good.
Oh, man.
That was good. And then we've had rattlesnake that's been cooked over the open pit, rabbit. People bring other stuff in as well, and that is just optional.
Yes.
You don't have to sample it, but... You know, to me, there's nothing better than having a big old hunk of that cougar meat and we're all just taking bites and passing to the next person and just keep going back and forth till it's gone. It was good.
Well, it sounds like whatever level of adventure you're looking for, you'll find it there.
Yes. Right. Yes. Yeah. You know, if you go on the plant walk, because you can do that, and it's the edible food plant walk, and you go out for a few hours and you gather a whole bunch of stuff and you bring it back and you cook it up in traditional ways as well. That is a lot of fun, too. And, you know, again, bugs won't be in it.
So we've discussed the kids program that Jean runs, and we don't have anybody here representing the teen program, so I can't tell you much about it other than that, yes, there is a teen-specific program, and should be a lot of fun. But basically, whether kids, teens, or adults, it's still like us adults, we're still playing with sticks and rocks.
Might be a little harder to keep those teens from getting maimed, but I imagine you'll pull it off.
Well, actually, the teen program is run by Christian Bond, and he is an Anasazi trail walker. And so he comes up from, you know, down south, and he will do spoon carving with the kids. He'll take them out in the woods, and they'll do, excuse me, plant identification and a whole bunch of cool stuff, too. So, but Christian is an adventurer, and same thing, he promises to not lose, maim, or kill them, but...
Well, why don't you all tell us if a person is interested in knowing more about the gathering between the rivers, what would be the best way for them to learn about that or get in touch with someone to sign up?
The website.
Yeah.
Yep. If you go to betweentherriversgathering.com, that will have all the information on there. It will have all the instructors on there. It will have everything you need to know, whether it's, you know, price, location, everything like that.
All right. Well, we'll mention that again before the show is over. But in the meantime, I think it's time for a bit of a break. For those of you who are just joining us, you're listening to 88.5 KRFY, listener-supported radio for the Idaho's Panhandle. You can find us at www.krfy.org. And if you're not able to hear some or all of this morning's show, you can always catch up with it via our podcast, also found at krfy.org. Normally, we would now go to a song break, and I have a few good ones lined up for this topic. However, we have some skills that we've not talked about here, and one of them is coming from Jean. Jean, as we speak, she's putting her guitar strap over her neck, and she's taking off her headset, and what's going to happen, I hope, is that she's going to play us a tune, something that you might play at a gathering.
It's typical, and this is the fun thing, is gatherings have a lot of fun in the evening with bonfire entertainment. You will find all sorts of interesting instruments that come out, whether it's didgeridoos, mandolins, violins, different types of guitars. We've had a dobro, and then lots of drums. And I think, Ed, you usually pull out a drum, don't you?
I have no musical skill whatsoever.
No musical skills?
No, I can play the radio.
Well, what are you going to play for us, Jean?
Well, I'm going to start off with a bluegrass song. I normally do Scottish and Irish folk music, but I do a little bit of bluegrass as well. So I'll start off with, it's called Long Black Veil. Sorry. Ten years ago, on a cold, dark night, someone
the town hall high, the people saw, they all agreed that the slayer ran with blood like me. She walks these hills in a long in a long black veil. She visits my grave when the night winds wail. Nobody knows, nobody sees, nobody knows but me. The scaffold is high, eternity is near. She stands in the crowd and sheds not a tear. But sometimes at night, when the cold winds moan, in a long black veil, she cries on my bones. She walks these hills in a long,
go to the gathering just to hear music like that.
She has a beautiful voice.
That was lovely. Thank you.
Well, there are a lot of talented people that come to these. So there's mm-hmm. there's amazing singers. Hillary Peterson is one. Mm-hmm. And I pale in comparison to her. She has talent that is just, she sings like an angel. And Hillary and Jed come to these as well. And I believe they're from North Idaho.
They're from Sandpoint.
Oh, okay. Yeah. There we go.
Well, that is interesting because this is really a music community, and if our community hasn't heard about you yet, they should. Your singing is beautiful. Thank you.
Oh, thanks.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about both the Between the Rivers gathering and then other gatherings. This one's happening in around Memorial Day, but they go on throughout the year, don't they? And is that based on the parts of the country that...
The last count that I heard, there are 26 various gatherings going on in the North American continent.
A person could just travel from gathering to gathering.
I'd love to.
Yeah, there actually are people who do, and I'm just totally jealous. I'm so jealous of them.
Winter count is in February in Arizona. So, yes, it's kind of year-round, mm-hmm. certainly more in the summer.
They pretty much, I know they're starting to get some going in Utah, starting in April. They're getting ready to get one going next year, I think, will be its first official year. And then Between the Rivers is kind of the spring kickoff. It's getting pretty good-sized at this point. And that one, of course, starts Memorial Day and runs through that week. There is the Saskatoon Circle that is up in the Winthrop area, I believe.
Yeah, Twisp area.
Yeah, Twisp, yeah. Mm. And that one is the second week of June, I believe, second or third week of June.
About the third week. I think it's least a couple of weeks after the Between the Rivers.
Yeah, so I guess probably the third week of June for Saskatoon Circle. And then there's a new one that I'm going to down in Utah that is the 27th of June or 29th of June, somewhere around there. But that one is called Fire to Fire Gathering. And then after that, there is a gathering over on the coast, Echoes in Time. That one's in July. And that's on the Oregon coast. There's just, they are cropping up everywhere. But the Northwest, mainly the Western states, has the majority of them. Mm-hmm. But they're finding more and more cropping up over in, you know, the Ozark area. And
right. Well, you know, we always think of living outdoors primitively in the summertime, and it seems so idyllic then. But what about winter skills? Do you work on anything for wintertime, or is it not focused on winter?
There are a few of us that work on wintertime stuff. Since these gatherings are in the summer, it's hard to do much in the way of winter training. And primitive people spent three seasons trying to prepare for winter. And so if you are going to try to do primitive skills in the winter, you're going to have a lot of preparation before you actually go out and do it. So there's very few people that I know of that have enough furs and footwear and all of the different pre-made tools and such they would need to go out winter camping primitive style.
Yes, good point. And winter time was a kind of a time of quiet and preserving your food, et cetera, right?
Well,
quieter.
It would require a tremendous effort to go through deep snow for, say, Northern Europeans and such. So, yeah, you'd be trying to semi-hibernate for the winter.
Right.
Yeah. In the wintertime is traditionally when that's when they would say, okay, well, we have all these basket weaving supplies that we stocked up during the summertime. We have all this wool that we processed during the summertime. Now it's time to do the spinning and the weaving and the basketry and the things like that. And that's when, you know, a lot of the indoor things would happen. So it's not really so much surviving the winter, because if you did everything you should have during the warmer months like our ancestors did, then you're prepared and you can just hole up and hibernate.
Yeah, it'd be a good time of year to make arrow points for the next hunting season.
Sure, or knit your, or make your clothes, et cetera, moccasins, things like that. Mm-hmm. Now, we haven't touched on this very much yet, but there are primitive skills that relate to some modern skills that we're working on. What I'm getting at are energy-saving things and passive energy skills. And is there a place for the primitive? I imagine there's a place for the primitive at a gathering, but do you have any interest in modern alternative energy, or do you stick with things from the past? I'm talking about like solar panels and things like that.
A lot of people that I've met through this type of gatherings and such are building permaculture homesteads. And so the goal is not as much alternative energy, but just weaning yourself off of energy and not needing much.
Yeah.
Using free-flowing gravity water supply, so you don't need the big heavy-duty pump and electricity to pump your water out of the ground. Just things like that, minimizing as much as possible, and then supplementing with a little solar energy or something to run the computer.
Yeah, finding ways to be independent of the grid and those necessities. Because if you're dependent upon that, what happens if it's suddenly taken away?
Sure.
You know, I have neighbors that if the power goes out, they go into a tailspin. They panic because, oh no, what are we going to do? And at our house, we just kind of go, light the lanterns, this is fun.
Yes, I understand that. So it sounds as though it's a combination of very old skills, saving energy, making good use of your site, the site where you live, that sort of thing.
Making a good use of your resources, but also learning to live in harmony with it, not trying to take it over, but working with it, being part of it. That's a huge part of it there.
Yes. Well, I'd like to ask you both, what happens after the gathering is over? Do you take off the buckskins and, like, go to the office? What happens with you all?
How I dress at gatherings is pretty much how I dress around. I mean, I wore my buckskin skirt to work. I work at a gas station as well, and I had my buckskin skirt at the gas station. And boy, you know, it definitely drew some attention. But, you know, my dreads that you see, they're in my hair 24/7. You know, so
some good PR for future gatherings.
And yeah, you know, it's the hippie self that people see in me. It's, I mean, I'm even like this at church. So hey,
you're all out there. What about you, Ed? Do you take off those buckskins and?
Well, I do put them back on occasionally. I don't only wear them to gatherings, and I do get back home and have projects that I got started on at a gathering, and I strive to complete them. Have done recently, done some real good work.
Well, what
proud
sort
of myself.
So you've left the gathering, you've gotten some basic skills. Uh-huh. What have you both gone home and worked on?
Oh, gosh. At our house, I know my boys still continued to work with their atlatls and darts and, you know, target practice with that. They got pretty good at it. They obliterated their styrofoam thing that was out in the horse pasture. But friction fire, I mean, we had a challenge the other night at our house where the boys were challenged to whoever could get the fire started first would get so much playtime on something else. And then who could get their dinner cooked first. And so Indy had created this cute little, you know, number 10 can wood stove. And he was second to get his fire started, but he was first to eat because his food cooked faster. And, you know, but the others got, my older boy, he got a fire going first and cooked three meals on his, but Indy ate first because he was fast.
He used his energy wisely. You used your fire wisely and had a good stove. Smart.
Yes, he did. So it you know, kept it more contained and, you know, didn't take as much fuel to cook his food in half the time it did the others. And, you know, it's about, you know, them learning and creating and experimenting and trying new things. And, you know, I think it gives them a certain amount of confidence you don't normally see. And he's still very shy, but but at gatherings, he comes into his own. He's this little life wire you see just bouncing around camp, and he's always helping people. And
he's probably more accomplished than lots of the grown-ups. Ed, I see the buckskin jerkin. I think that's what I might call it, or shirt.
It's a pullover shirt.
Okay. And I looked under the table, and I noticed some moccasins. Were those?
No, these are actually Scottish-style gilly brogues.
Ah,
a gilly brogue.
Gilly brogue. It's just basically a really crude and simple way to put something on the bottom of your foot to protect it. And they would just go stomping off through the bog and the marsh, and they know they're going to get wet. So you don't want a shoe that's going to fill up with water. And so these obviously will drain both ways. And it was just a way to get some protection on the bottom of the foot. I recently completed a pair of moccasins, and buckskinning is to improve my clothing and attire is a current project I'm working on. I've got 14 deer and an elk calf to finish processing.
I don't think we'll have time to talk about the many ways one can process a deer, which include brains and other things. But that can be learned at the gathering.
Yes.
Yes,
that's
there's
right.
Actually another Idahoan.
Another sand pointer.
Yeah, sand point. Carrie Lee comes Carrie over Lee. And mm-hmm. she teaches the brain tanning class.
Yes.
Wow.
Uh-huh.
It's a 4-day process. So you have to really commit to it, but you have a beautiful hide when you're done.
So there are more classes and things to do than you can possibly do in one gathering. And
then you could shake a rabbit stick at.
Yeah, yes. You got it. And so most people pick out the thing that they want to do the most. And if that happens to be a big project like making a buckskin or making a bow or something like that, that'll take most of your time. But there'll still be opportunities to go fit in maybe a cordage making class or something else while you're waiting for your buckskin to soak or dry or something, you can do it.
So as a strategy for attending Rabbit Stick, you might have one really important skill, the gathering. You might have a very important skill you want to learn, but then could take in other smaller skills.
Yeah.
A few things.
With knowing that we have 60 instructors, that means there will be
lots of 60
different classes going on throughout the week.
Yeah.
So 60 different opportunities.
Yeah. Well, why don't you remind us again about where and when and the contact info?
All right. Well, it's the most information can be found at betweentheriversgathering.com. That will have pretty much everything you need. And if you do have more questions, you can always contact Patrick Farneman, who is the guy who heads it up. And on the contact page, the email goes right to him. And this is going on Memorial Day and then for that entire week.
Afterwards.
Yep. Our kickoff is Memorial Day. And so it's, we have way too much fun.
And, you know, I know that one can go to a like a school where you might learn more about ancestral skills. I know that you can go online. Why might you choose a gathering rather than one of those resources? Is it a little more budget friendly? Or
That's what I was going to point out is budget. And if you're on a limited budget, you could look at a $300 tuition to a gathering, but you look at the amount of training available and what you get and your food and stuff, it's the biggest bang for the buck.
Yeah.
There are quite a few very good schools available, and you'll have to kind of just check and see what people can fit into their budget and their time.
Yes, but certainly for an introduction to this kind of activity, it's a great way to meet people and not spend too much to find out if you're interested in this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Ed?
We've talked about having fun around the campfires each evening and after dinner and after classes. And in particular, Thursday afternoon is Highland Games Day. We do happen to have a lot of Scottish heritage in our community of people. And so an admirable number of them own a kilt. And we do caber toss and stone toss, and they kilt race and play Highland games on Thursday. So absolutely, totally dedicated just to fun.
It sounds like quite a spectacle, too.
And we even do that with the kids. So the kids will get to have their own little mini Highland games, and they'll have, I mean, not a full-blown kilt, but they'll get a little wraparound, you know, type kilt. They will get to do their own little mini Highland games. We are going to do some Scottish themed food, so they'll get to make their own oat cakes and things like that, where they have to grind the oats in a mortar and pestle and cook it on a stone over the fire. And so just fun things like that. They get immersed in the culture, just have some fun. And of course, that's the night we'll pull up most of the Celtic music around the fire. And yeah, but we have a lot of fun, a lot of laughter. I have videos and pictures from last year's, and it was a riot.
Well, who wouldn't want to know how to make their own oat cake?
I know. They're good.
Delicious. we'll wrap up our interview shortly, but do either of you have any last either statements or stories you'd like to share before we end our morning show?
I'd like to point out that early registration for the BTR, Between the Rivers Gathering, ends May 1st.
Yes, it does.
So you can get the full week adult package deal for $255 at this point.
Yeah.
And then it's $300 after May 1st. But for people who cannot attend the entire week, there is a daily rate. And you could go online, like betweentherriversgathering.com, and pick out what classes you'd be interested in and go over on those particular days or day.
Yeah, we're actually this year able to start posting a lot of the classes that are available online so people can see ahead of time a lot of the stuff that's going to be offered. And hopefully soon I have kids camp activities getting posted up there soon. We're still trying to finalize a lot, but
I'm glad that you shared that because not everyone's free for a week or necessarily wants to camp, but a day trip is pretty doable from Sandpoint area.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. And it's well worth it. The main thing I could say about it is going to a gathering is a life-changing event. It really is. I mean, it was for me. I don't know if it was for Ed, but.
Oh yeah.
Apparently so, looking at the two of you.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, I'd like to thank you both for joining us, Ed Busby from Gathering Between the Rivers Gathering, and Jean Jones. Well, she's everything. She's a teacher at the gathering. I haven't mentioned this yet, but she's also a radio broadcaster. Tell us where, Jean.
I am from Chewelah, Washington, so I'm from KCHW 102.7 Northern Lights Public Radio.
Can we live stream that one if we can't get it over here in Sandpoint?
Oh. Yeah, actually, yeah. You can. We are on, you know, kchw.org.
Okay.
And yeah, so we live stream all the time. And I also do a Celtic show on Friday nights from 6 to 8 p.m.
I'll have to tune in for that one. And we know she's a beautiful musician, and I'm hoping she'll play us one more tune.
Oh, you want one more, huh? All right. Well, I'm going to go back to an old 1700s song. This is an old Robert Burns. It's called Red is the Rose. Adjust it here.
Come o'er the hills, my bonnie Irish lad. Come o'er the hills to your darling. You chose the rose, love, and I'll make the vow, and I'll be your true love forever. Red is the rose that in yonder garden grows. Fair is the lily of the valley. Clear is the water that flows from the pool. And my love is fairer than any. 'Twas down by Killarney's green woods we strayed. The moon and the stars, they were shining. The moon shone its rays on his locks of golden hair, and he swore he'd be my love forever. Red is the rose that in yon,
sorry, I really lost it that time.
That's live radio, we don't care.
Yeah, I do that once in a while.
Red is the rose that in yonder garden grows. Fair is the lily of the valley. Clear is the water that flows from the pool. And my love is fairer than any. 'Tis not for the parting that my sister pays. 'Tis not for the grief of my mother. 'Tis all for the loss of my Irish lad, that my heart is breaking forever. Red is the rose that in yonder garden grows. Getting distracted. Fair is the lily of the valley.
That was excellent still. I want to thank you for singing twice for us, Jean. You probably didn't expect to have a second song. Well, I'm going to thank you both for joining us, and then we'll now move on to a few upcoming morning shows because we're running short on time. Thank you, Ed, and thank you, Jean.
Thank you for having us.
You're welcome.
Yes, hope to see you at the gathering.
Yeah.
All right, folks, let's talk about what's happening with upcoming morning shows. And Wednesday, that'll be tomorrow, April 12th. I hope you'll join Susie Perez and Chris Bessler, and their guest will be the Sandpoint City Administrator, Jennifer Stapleton. She's going to talk about upcoming street revision, the upcoming street revision to two-way and other city happenings. That's tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. on 88.5 KRFY. Thursday, I hope you'll tune in and listen to host Jack Peterson and his guest Debbie Love. She's from the Bonner Community Food Bank. That will be this Thursday at 8 a.m. on 88.5 KRFY. And we have time for just a couple of upcoming events, and then we'll be out with a song, and this one will not be by Jean. We'll rest her voice. So today is the 11th, and for those of you who are free tonight, you can certainly run out and listen to the Radical Movie Night. That's going to be at Evans Brothers Coffee, 524 Church Street. They're hosting Radical Movie Night. On the 13th, you can run to the Panada, and it will be France. They're hosting screenings of the film France at 7:30 p.m. April 13th at 3:30 and 7:30 p.m. And we are out of time for upcoming events. So, folks,